And this is how we know that I'm recording, because I always go, oh, hey, hello, as if people are now suddenly listening.
They're streaming into the room. Yeah. Oh, here they come.
Hey, everybody. Everybody listening.
There you go. Sit down. Have a seat.
Get out. The lemonade over by the door.
21 past the hour. It's 12:21 here at Webcomics Weekly. It's 45 degrees outside. Little Webcomics traffic.
This is Chopper Dave.
This is Chopper, Chopper Scott. It's Chopper Dave, Chopper Chris, and Chopper Brad. Who's making that noise? Because that does not sound like a chop.
The only thing I'm doing that's coming true, clearly, evidently. I'm going to talk through like the coconut graph. I'll do my whole show in Morse code.
Thanks. Oh. Thanks, Brad Bot. Thanks, Geiger Tron.
That's been our fifth guest for the week, the Master Control Program. Thanks so much for coming.
Think about the end of life. So we have a special guest today who is taking time out of a busy schedule to talk to us four jerks. It's Jim DeMonaco's with the Emerald City Comic Con.
Hello, hello. What's going on, gentlemen? And I use that term loosely.
You should.
You should. It's appropriate.
Considering that one of us is artificial life this week, then yes, you should.
We it's really funny because on our last podcast, which we recorded on Sunday, we were like, that'd be a good question to ask Jim. And then right before this show, Brad's like, what was the question we were supposed to ask Jim? And even though we recorded the podcast mere days ago, none of us could remember.
Well, that's because you just try to wash that out of our memory.
I remembered. You guys didn't ask me. It was I was the one that brought up the question. I remember, Jim.
Oh, it's very safe for you to say that now.
Yeah.
Listen, no one consulted me. No one called.
Look,
no email.
If nothing else, then getting the word out about the Emerald City Comic Con, we got to remember to ask him that question by the end of it. Okay, so don't forget.
You know what? Why don't we ask that now? Because
no, you know
I
why? It's not good to start with it.
It's kind of a downer of a question.
So let's start with the fun stuff, which it's is this weekend, Seattle. Woo!
Oh man, I cannot tell you how excited I am. I'm leaving tomorrow night. Gonna spend a couple days just soaking in Seattle and prepping for the con, and then.
Nice.
Con happens on – it's Saturday and Sunday, right?
Correct. Yeah. The Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th, which incidentally, I'm telling you guys and all the Webcomics Weekly listeners who come to Seattle, also my brother's birthday. So if you happen to see my brother George, who's a hell of a fella, tell him happy birthday because I thought I'd bring all his friends together into one big stadium of, you know, convention rama to wish him
out. Wow.
That was rad.
Family is important to you.
It is. It's very Greek.
So what day officially is his birthday?
It's actually Sunday, so the 14th is actually his birthday.
That is crazy because my birthday is the 15th.
Oh.
What?
Yeah, like, and my brother's the 19th. There is a lot of March birthdays.
Oh, my God. My birthday's January.
Shut up.
There's a whole lot of sex happening in June.
Yeah, there is. Especially in my family, because that's when my dad's birthday is. So, anyway.
So the one time a year? Is that what you're saying?
Well, because my brother...
Scott, back away. Don't do the math on that.
My brother and I were trying to... We were sitting here, and I said, I'm going to be gone for my birthday. You realize that? And my brother said, will you be back for mine? I said, yeah, on the 19th, I'll be back. And then someone said, how in the hell did it work out that you guys have birthdays on March 15th and March 19th, but you're 3 years apart? And then I'm like, I don't know. What the hell is happening 9 months before our birthday? And we counted backwards, and it's almost exactly my dad's birthday.
guess what he got for his birthday?
Let's see, what time was it? Yep, it was during Chico and the Man. I knew it.
Oh, God. And that was the time of year that Trader Joe started to sell $2 Chuck. Oh, it all's coming together.
You can map the whole night.
Yeah, you can figure it all out.
And then I show it to my dad.
Sizzler had their 2-for-1 dinners that night. Oh, God.
I show it to Dad, and I've traced it from the Sizzler to my conception. It's 98.5% accurate. So,
Sizzler, nice.
Jim, I have to tell you that the Emerald City Comic Con that we're going to see this year probably won't be recognizable from the con last year because it's probably going to be so much bigger. And I got to tell you that last year's was – I mean, to see where it's grown from the first year I attended is amazing. The show seems to be kind of almost growing out of your control, man. It's this force of nature almost now.
It's become kind of a monstrosity, yeah. Like this year, like it's just like the most crazy lineup of people we have coming out yet. Like, it's funny because I feel like there's a certain point where I'm like, now I'm not even like even I might be disappointed next year when I look at the lineup because this year's lineup is so good. You know, aside from the entire Web Comics Weekly cast of fellows here, we have like Jeff Johns, who's making now, thanks to his promotion, his first public appearance since he was promoted to, like, you know, his new position at DC Comics, editor in chief of Marvel Comics. Joe Quesada himself is coming. The big one, which a lot of people are excited about, is Stan the Man Lee will actually be at the show. And it's just kind of it's crazy. And that's like that's just those three. And that's like, you know, we have like over 200 guests at the show.
But like, isn't Spock coming to your show? Isn't Leonard Nimoy going to be
here? Like, I didn't even get to the media guest. Yeah, like Leonard Nimoy was on the radio this morning. I caught his he was doing some local promotion, and I caught the tail end of it where he's like, you know, life is awesome. And I wake up every day and I turn to my wife and we just laugh. And the guy on the radio is like, are you guys naked? and it was like, Leonard Nimoy was like, and we're done. I was like, thanks. That's all.
God.
Before he ever got to mention the show.
He's like, oh, never mind.
Cut to Leonard Nimoy and his wife heading to Sizzler.
I'm really curious.
In June. Oh, that's so weird that he was born in June as well.
Yeah, exactly. All these little Nimoys.
I'm curious about Leonard Nimoy as a media guest. So to get the Leonard Nimoy, there's a lot of media guests, and I've sat with a bunch of them and talked with a bunch of them, and it's kind of a you kind of fall into these ruts when you do the convention circuit as a comic book guy, and you fall into the same tropes. And then the media guests have a whole different set of kind of life on the road moments. But like, does a Leonard Nimoy, does he show up looking just to kind of come in, do a talk, get his autographs and get out? Or is he going to be like showing, because I know he's really into photography.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually, like, when he was doing the radio thing this morning, like, that's a lot what he was talking about. He's actually doing a huge exhibit at some – I was only half paying attention, to be honest. I was just working with that in the background. But he's doing, a big exhibition at a museum. And, you know, so it's, like, I think a lot of it is he likes to engage fans. And obviously most people are going to come up and be like, oh, I love you as Spock. And, you know, there's going to be the kind of maybe newer guys. We're like, oh yeah, it's like infringe. But like anybody I think who engages them on a different level, those are the people that like they enjoy having media guests. I mean, it's sort of like not necessarily everyone hates hearing your older work is better. You know what I mean? Like as an artist or as a writer or anything. Nobody likes hearing like, you know, I like your stuff better. But so there is something to be said for like when you talk to someone and engage them in something that they're currently actively interested in. I think you get a different experience out of it than, you know, I mean, I love him as Spock as well. And I'm sure if I went up, I'm like, I love you as Spock. He'd be like, well, thank you very much. So like that's ground that's been tread. I'm pretty sure, you know, quite well at this point. So, you know, if you're up and you're like, you know, I checked out Leonard Nimoy photography or I've seen your art book. And I think you'd actually come away with a different experience than most. Like someone, if like Scott, as a easy example, if someone came up and was like, "I'm a huge fan of Truth, Justin, and the American Way," and you'd be like, "Well, you know, like that's probably not something to get as often as you get I'm a big fan of PvP.
Yeah, that would make me super happy too, because I feel like that book's very overlooked. So that would, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it'd be it would be good.
Yeah, so I think that's so I think that applies to everyone, Leonard Nimoy, and you know, you name it, anybody who's there, who has stuff. I mean, like Will Wheaton, who's a perpetual favorite. Like, you know, you're going to get a lot of Wesley Crushers, but if you're like, yeah, I really like what you did on the Big Bang Theory, I really, you know, I follow your Twitter, I follow your blog, that's going to be more engaging a thing than like going over that ground that's been there forever. Mm-hmm.
But Jim, I got to tell you though, the you know how sometimes as a you look at the guest list and you're like, oh wow, look at this name. But I was amazed by, and I honestly don't know how you guys do it. You have like 150, 200 people on that guest list.
Yeah. It's,
I mean, just the volume of guests is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's become again one of those things where for the past 4 months, I've actually like been turning away people. We've gotten very lucky in the fact that the show has a really great reputation and people really want to be part of it. So you do get a lot of guys who are like, I just want to come to the show. And so then like your guest list beefs up without you even like inviting people. I mean, I keep turning people away because I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. Like I literally do not have a table for you to sit at. And I get these emails like, I got two this morning. I'm like, they're like, I know there's a 0.00005% chance of this happening, and I'm like, yeah, sorry, dude. Like, I would love to say yes to every single person who wants to come and be at the show, but you know, at a certain point, we have to, you know, we also have artists who are, you know, local guys or even national guys who buy tables and set up, and you have to balance it out so that you know there's enough. One, you have to kind of make sure there's enough cash on the floor, right? Like, there's a certain amount of, you know, no one wants to set up and then sell nothing. That's not the point. So you need to also have a balance between, like, invited guests, comp guests, and then artists who are actually buying tables and, you know, the product that they're selling. So yeah, it's an interesting mix. We've gotten, you know, every year it just becomes more and more like a balancing act of when, you know, when do we cut things off? When do we like, just let tables be only for, you know, non-paying, like only for guests, only for professionals, only for this or that. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, I was just more impressed by the sheer size of that guest list, though. I mean, it's like you have invited everyone in comics, it seems like.
Yeah, it's a big party, man. It seriously is. One of the things that's really exciting about the Emerald City Con. All right.
What happened?
Hello?
As we were talking, a bird decided to land right outside my window, and my cat became once again unawares that there's glass separating him from what's outside the window. And he just threw himself at the window, so it was really hard for me not to laugh at him just smashing himself up against the window. You know,
we have like a certain, like, just to kind of, I guess, address that, it's like, you know, we have a certain amount of people that we invite who are like, yeah, we would really like to have you at the show. And then we have an equal amount of people who are just coming out. And we're very lucky. We're very, very fortunate that some of the biggest names in comics, like, pretty much live next door. Like, so people always see, they're like, oh, you know, Ed Brubaker and Brian Bendis. It's like, you know, those guys who are either like Brubaker lives in Seattle and Bendis just drives up. Like, that is not a luxury.
Yeah, Portland
that
is huge for
have.
Comics for some reason. Like, Portland is just like the comic town.
Yeah, like between that, I mean, and it's over the last few years has just grown exponentially. Like, you know, Matt Fraction just moved there, Rick Remender, you know, Bendis, Mac, Mike Oeming just moved to Seattle. Like,
yeah, you know who else just moved to Seattle?
Christopher J. Straub, third.
Now that's a name I want to. All right.
Also, thanks for the email letting me know you were here. I really appreciate it.
Oh, see how it got turned on you?
Wow, that
everybody, yeah, that got cold. Everybody got, a couple people got mad at me for that. But honestly, I've been here about a week and I've been waiting for furniture. I didn't want to be like, hey, everybody, I'm here and I will see you in 4 weeks because I have to be here for the plumber.
I didn't know plumbers delivered furniture. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was well told.
So the question I have for you, Jim, is you guys have humble origins, I think, right? Like you run a comic shop in Seattle. You were just a guy that wanted to start a convention. I'm sure the first couple of years weren't profitable. And now you have probably one of the largest independent comic conventions out there. So now, without being like a big giant company like, let's say, Reed, or without being a giant nonprofit like the Comic-Con, how have you managed to be this really awesome con without kind of falling into the same kind of BS that Wizard's falling into? Like, I guess the crux of this question is, I feel there are a couple cons out there, like the Heroes Con, yours, Baltimore, that are the bigger comic conventions that really are focused on improving comics and helping comics as opposed to squeezing the life out of comics.
Well, I think, I think one of the things is that, you know, and I'm never one to diss, but like, you know, like I feel like Wizard eventually became disconnected from the very same people that they were technically servicing by their magazine. Is Wizard became more interested in Wizard as part of the comic landscape rather than Wizard servicing the comic landscape, which is where it was successful at the get-go, and then became, you know, then it became something that it was not, because that they sort of lost their focus and they became more interested, I feel like, in what Wizard was doing rather than what was happening in the industry. So I think you see that guys like Shelton at Heroes and guys like Mark at Baltimore and guys like me, like, we're all active owners of comic book stores. You know, I have three, and we are very interested in continuing that because it's also our business. So we started the convention kind of on the side, and yet obviously that's its own business, but I feel like we stay connected to the comics audience because that's what we do for a living. Like, we don't have all these other jobs. Like, you know, my partners who run the stores, my brother, the guys, Brian, Chris, Mike, like, they're there at the store every day. And so the way shows like ours, I think, continue to thrive is, I'm not saying that, you know, like, we have the finger on the pulse of the industry, but at least we know what's happening. And I think the more you get disconnected from that, like, I don't think someone who has no interest in comics, you know, if they look at it as a business model and be like, yeah, that sounds great, like comic books, ooh, 50% markup, et cetera, et cetera. Some guy who looks at comics as a purely business standpoint can't make a success of it because they're not a fan, nor do they bring a sensibility to it that they're like, okay, this is, I want to do something that serves this community. Like, I started a show because I wanted the people in the Northwest to have a cool show to go to, and that has become as big as it has, you know, I'm very proud of, but still, that's just one of those things where it's like, in a way, a happy accident, but all we wanted to do is be like, okay, I know our customers, I know all these people out here to totally support an awesome convention, and we should just do that because that's what I want. I want to do something for the community.
Right. Hey, that leads us perfectly into the question we wanted to ask him.
That's true.
So now it's time.
So Jim, here was my concern from last week, and this, you are the perfect, absolute perfect person to ask this to, because you are both.
I am a perfect person.
You are both the platonic ideal of manhood. No, I mean, you are both a shop owner and a successful convention organizer, and I think a forward thinking guy. So here was my concern, and you can tell me if I'm being ridiculous or not. So for me, about 10, maybe on a good year, 15% of my income comes from convention sales, right? And, but as a web cartoonist, I actually don't go through Diamond and I don't go through shops a lot. So that's never been a real big concern of mine. It's that state of that side of the industry. But I did get concerned that I started thinking about it, and I was like, you know, if print continues to have this downward slide and the physical shops start to disappear around the country more and more, how would that impact small to medium-sized conventions, which would in turn impact my price per table or the likelihood that some conventions would disappear? And I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Like, what's your take on that? If more and more mom-and-pops stop appearing at, say, a Baltimore or an Emerald City Comic-Con or a Dragons or a Heroes Con, does that impact the show's bottom line and therefore you would have to raise prices? Or how would that impact the show?
Well, so I think that's kind of a like a two-tier question, right? So one of it is when it, sort of if and when the, for lack of a better term, like the digital switchover is going to happen. And that's the thing. It's like, so right now you have, so Marvel's best-selling book, if I'm not mistaken, is like New Avengers or Mighty Avengers, one of those. It's about 100,000 copies.
Okay.
So split over roughly 3,000 comic book stores in the U.S. So not to do like just a straight average, but you know, it's that's a lot of copies per store, blah blah blah. But what you're gonna have to see is that how many of those guys, and let's use the iPad as the easy model because that's what like I think has spurred a lot of this discussion is the iPad. So the iPad is not exactly a affordable like mass media item. Like I don't know that every single person, like if tomorrow iPads dropped to $59 and everybody and their mother could afford one, how many people are still going to be like, yeah, I like the comic books are such a weird niche because people really like the physicality of them. Like
yeah.
You hear it all the time. It's like, you know, yeah, I like trades or I like, you know, single comics, but like, you know, digital comics, there's something, you lose something. And until they get to, I think there will be time when people do make that switch. And here's, I think, when that's going to happen is when you have something more akin to like the Kindle for comic books. And by that, I mean, it can still be the iPad, but the service needs to be, okay, so instead of going to the store and dropping $30 every week on 10 Marvel comics, which cost me $3 a piece, I'm going to have a subscription to Marvel Digital Comics for the iPad. It costs me $49.95 or whatever price point that is. And not only do I get every new comic that comes out every week on my iPad, I also have unlimited access to the entire backlog. So if I'm sitting around and I'm like, you know what I haven't read for a while? Daredevil, The Man Without Fear. So you would just go click, click, and Daredevil, The Man Without Fear would you know, click off there. You'd find is that, oh, you know what? I really would like to own this as a thing. Then you would find a link to Amazon or whatever, and you would buy Daredevil. And
right.
All that is to say that, like, though I think you're correct, I mean, if that model does become more and more prevalent, you are going to see a drop-off. Because here's what's going to happen. If Marvel at a certain point is like has enough subscribers to continue the quality of their books and let's stop producing monthlies because everybody is doing the same thing. Like no one's really producing monthlies, and kids now who are 6-year-old are growing up, you know, technically with like an iPad in their hand, they don't know what they've ever missed from having, like, you know, you're going to see a whole generation very soon that print media is already obsolete to them because they grew up not only on the internet, which you see a lot of that, but you're going to see them, they got all their information off their Kindle, iPad, or whatever other digital reading device that,
yeah,
you know, eventually will be in schools, et cetera.
But is really the iPad what scares you about harming the retail business? Because it seems to me like online sales of physical media will bury retailers before an iPad will. Like a good example is the other night we were out and I said, you know, I've not seen the new Miyazaki film Ponyo, and I know it just came out on Blu-ray. I'm going to go check it out. I'm going to pick it up. So we walked into the Best Buy that was next to the restaurant we were at, and they didn't have it on Blu-ray, only DVD. So I said, well, I'll drive to the next Best Buy. That's not that far away. So we drove to it. They didn't have it on Blu-ray. And I said, you know what? I never should have walked into this effing Best Buy in the first place. And I went home and I ordered it on Amazon. Like, why did I even bother? Like, this is a total pain in the ass. I don't need to watch it tonight. I'll just order it off of Amazon. It'll come to my door and I'll forget about it. And in a day or two, it'll be at my door and I'll get to watch it. And, like, when PvP first started as a print collection, I would say you know, 95% of my sales were through Diamond. And looking at that first trade, PvP Book 1, you know, I would say 100% to 95% were Diamond sales. Looking at Book 6, Book 7, it's going to be like 95% online sales, 2% convention sales, and like I'll sell 800 through Diamond.
Right.
You know? And that's not because I don't want to sell them through Diamond. It's just the stores are in a position where that's all they can do. And so, you know, there's a lot of people buying PvP from me directly and bypassing you. And so the question we were having was, you know, like, it's going where it's going, and we sell directly to our fans. So if the retail system, the way that it is now, kind of collapsed a little bit, and I think bigger stores will be able to stay up with, you know, books and trade sales only.
Sure.
Would that suddenly affect all these shows going out of business? Like, do
yeah.
you feel
so
that
without addressing then, like, you know, the possibility, if we dig that very specific scenario, then yes, I actually do think, of course, it would affect conventions because, you know, a lot of people, first off, a lot of people hear about the conventions through their comic book stores. So taking a slice of the local economy, you're looking at a lot of the stores. Like for us, I know like all the stores in the Northwest, we're very active to like make sure every single one. So, and that is kind of preaching to the choir, but like, you know, if the store doesn't tell their customers about it, there's a good chance they might not even know, and that's fine. But on a larger scale, you're right. If stores start going out of business, and because of the business model change, yeah, you're definitely going to see an effect on conventions. I think it's probably pretty far off in the future, and I'm not trying to be like, oh, no, I'm, like, you know, ignoring something that's happening, but I don't think this is something that we'll deal with anytime soon. But I do see a day where if, as business models shift, I mean, you know, you're not going to E3, you know, or, you know, for comic books. You know, it's not going to be people set up with their screen and be like, download our comic. Come up, download our comic.
Right.
You know, because I don't think that you know, but if your business model, and, you know, using PvP as an example there, like, you know, at a certain point, you're like, well, convention sales are only X amount of my sales. I'm better off spending that money, you know, going to some other digital distribution portal somewhere else and being like, I'll just spend my money here for advertising to get more people to buy directly from you because you are not beholden to the retail structure that is out there anyway. So,
well, yeah, for me, Jim, though, I love the experience of going to conventions, and I they're good money makers for me. So for me, the fear was more what sort of externals that I don't control might eventually kill off smaller and mid-sized conventions, and that's the only one I could think of.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think you're right. Like, and for however far away it is in the future, I think that is probably the only thing that I can see that starts affecting shows is how people are actually, like, you know, purchasing their books and how they're getting them. And, you know, because there could be a certain, you know, there comes a day where, you know, you're not doing Sheldon collections. You're doing Sheldon, you know, just, you know, digital collections, and people download them and, you know, you get paid for that, and that's fine. You're not, I think we're kind of talking around the same point. I think you're right. Like, in the digital change, if it affects the retail community, will inevitably, like, you know, roll uphill and also affect the conventions, because at a certain point, like, people will still want to see the people creating the books, because I think
right.
that's, you know, but to use the easy example of the iPad, it's like, you know, are you going to get Joe Quesada to sign your iPad because it contains all your Marvel comics? You know, there becomes no more appeal for that, which is why I think that comics, not that they're, you know, in any way immune to this change, and it's definitely a conversation that keeps happening. But I think it's probably going to be one of the slowest things to change over, because there is this kind of behemoth system of, you know, print that, like, you know, I have no concrete numbers of what existing Digital Comics Unlimited, you know, system does. But there's a reason why they delay it for 6 months, so that, you know, retailers can sell their books and retailers continue to sell their books pretty heftily.
Right. Well, hey, Jim, just so you know, I actually agree with you that I don't think the iPad is going to make any significant difference to the print world of comics.
I don't either.
I think the people that buy comics and the price points that comics work at do not work with the price point of an iPad.
I think,
like you said, even if it was $50, the level of penetration that it would have to make to the overall population would still be so high that it would have to be as prevalent as books would to make a difference. You know?
I think it has a potential to be a possible new niche revenue stream for comics, but I don't think it could damage comics at this point. It's iPhone.
I think, yeah.
Now that Comixology app and the iVerse app and stuff like that, it's earning some creators, an extra, extra paycheck. And it's not necessarily, I don't think it's necessarily hurting anything in comics. But those comic readers on the iPhone are right now, I think at worst, they're just providing a new potential revenue stream for it. I get really I roll my eyes at retailers that kind of see someone on their iPhone downloading a comic and they're like, oh God, you're hurting my store.
Yeah, that's just not the case. I mean, and what's funny is that I have customers who straight up are like, yeah, I downloaded a ton of Marvel comics off, BitTorrent. I download. He's like, I read most of my stuff. What they end up doing, I know from a lot of these guys, is very much like a sampler pack. They'll read every Marvel comic this week, and then they'll come in and buy four of them because those are the ones that they liked enough that they would want to read again or keep.
Right.
And so even taking that and scaling it over into the mystical, like, iPad beast is like, if you're on this subscription service, there's a certain point where you're like, yeah, you know what? I like this comic. I want to keep getting my X-Men collection. Isn't Action Comics, like, aren't they approaching, like, number 1,000? It's like, they're not going to stop anytime soon, And I don't think that – I think you're right. We're going to see it being an alternate revenue source. I'm going to see it being a really interesting alternate way to get people into your books. But I don't think we're going to see physical sales affected for a very long time.
Yeah. Well, and in the meantime, your convention has grown like gangbusters year over year, so that nullifies my whole point entirely. But it's sort of a long term thought on my part.
Fuck it, Brad. that segues for me into an awesome announcement too. Is that so? This will be our last year as a 2-day convention, thanks to the ridiculous growth of the Emerald City Comic Con will start to be a 3-day convention starting in 2011.
Wow.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Whoa, what? I missed it.
mark your calendar, March 4th through 6th.
Really? You're already on the calendar for 2011?
Yep. And if it's a colossal failure, then we'll totally announce that we're going to be a 2-day show in 2012.
Can't imagine that happening.
I would love to see that announcement. Oh God. Oh.
Right. I don't think you guys know how bad it went. Okay, so 2012 is a half a day.
Yeah, exactly. We're excited to announce a picnic running between
2012 is a digital con. Everyone log on to your Emerald City Comic Con iPhone app and hello.
Exactly.
So now, what kind of things, obviously, what you think you can bring in terms of attendance comes in, but what other factors led you to that extra day?
Well, one of the things is that we have a waiting list so long that I could have, at least a third to almost a half of the show floor decide to not show up, and I would have enough people on the waiting list to just fill those slots.
Wow.
On the floor. Yeah.
So now, Jim, though, why not expand? Like, this is a good angle for Brad's question. Is why not expand the size of the show physically versus time wise? Is that a different?
Well, we're doing both. Right?
Oh, you're doing both. So, okay.
Yeah. So And the thing is, by doing both, if already we have enough, we have so many people who are like, well, you know, I spent 2 hours in line getting this one dude's autograph because there's so many lines that there's not enough time to do just what I want to do on the show floor, and that's not even counting, like, getting to all the programming. Like, you know, you guys have a panel, right? So that's someone who's off the floor for an hour, right?
Right, right.
So if they're like, okay, I want to get this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy's autograph. I want to see the Webcomics Weekly panel. I want to make sure I catch Cup of Joe and do two other things. Like, you know, like I want to see the DC Nation panel, and then, you know, I want to go see Leonard Nimoy talk. It's like, okay, so you've already eaten up 4 to 5 of that guy's hours in a 2-day span, one of the days, which is only 8 hours. So that leaves him 3 hours for, you know, a pretty packed show floor with a lot of interesting things to see. So what we want to do is expand the show floor by a bit to accommodate extra retailers, extra artists, extra guests, so to make the floor more appealing as well. But additionally, we're also expanding the programming track so that there's people who are like, yeah, I'm cool sitting in a panel all day because I want to see, you know, back to back to back, you know, this entire track of media guests or comic book guys or an entire, like, one of the things we want to do next year is do, we used to do more of them until we kind of ran out of the time to do panels, but we wanted to do like an entire track of like breaking into comics. So literally you can start from 10 a.m., 11 a.m. and sit in there and be like, have guys like Mark Waid tell you how he broke in as a writer, and then you have, I don't know, Alice Ross, whatever, you know, like whoever it is, be like, okay, this is how I got into painting, and just a complete, like, just one track. And so there's going to be guys who are going to come to the show and then plunk down in a seat and take notes for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. So there's so much programming. Like, you know, we're only able to accommodate, like, I think it's like 25, I think, panels, you know, over 2 days. And that's using, like, multiple rooms. So we want to be able to, like, expand it, not only expand the show floor, expand what we have to offer, but also expand our programming to make it that much more appealing to guys who really, like, you know, cover a lot of bases. Like, already we have a digital comics panel this year, which I'm sure is something that will be more popular next year. There's a lot of stuff. So all those factors, the our pre-sales for this year's show were triple what they were last year.
What?
Yeah. So, and that's, you know, we still do most of our sales at the door, but I actually can see this year being the first year where they have to stop us from selling because the floor will be at capacity.
So population-wise, Jim, do you already foresee that this year will be bigger than last year?
Yeah, without straight up guaranteeing it, yes. That's why.
Dang, because last year felt really busy. That's great.
Yeah, and of course last year was our best show yet, and so this one, like, it's on track to, you know, punch last year's show square.
You know what, Jim, by the way, that was a totally self-serving question on my part, because in the back of my mind, I'm going, money, 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 money.
Well, you better bring enough product, otherwise you're going to be crying.
I know, right? Dang.
And that's the thing. So, like, all these factors, the amount of media coverage we've gotten this year, we have, you know, three of the four TV stations locally are actually going to come out, which is something that, you know, as you start to get on the radar of the mass media as well, then not only will the hardcore guys continue to come, but then we also have an entire influx of other people who are just like, this sounds like a fun event. I just want to swing by and check it out. So
Yeah.
So, again, all those factors and more, we're like, all right, I think it's time to dip our toe into the 3-day pool and see how it goes. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, we're really excited. I mean, I already have actually a bunch of plans, a lot of really cool stuff, including so our logo for the show has a Space Needle in it, for those who don't know, like, it's a big monument, pretty symbolic of the city of Seattle. Well, it's actually technically privately owned, and so to use the Space Needle in an illustration, you actually have to have permission.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes. So, and neither did we. So, you know, it's one of those, you know, it was one of those phone calls where we're like, hey, your logo that's everywhere. Yes, technically ours. I'm like, yeah, that sucks. So we actually just work out a licensing agreement. They're really cool about it, as long as you're being respectful and, you know, like, as long as, you know, they can approve what you do with the logo. Like, so for us, we included in our logo, sent an email to the guy. He wrote back. He's like, this is totally fine. So I'm like, great. But wow. They're really happy with the show. They're really happy with what it's doing for the community. So next year, what they want to do is, like, work closer with the show and actually do promotions with the Space Needle to promote Emerald City next year, including, like, I have to run this by DC Comics, but they're like, yeah, we'll take one of our spotlights and turn it into a bat signal and shine it into the Space Needle.
Wow.
And I'm like, I would love to see the bat symbol shined onto the Space Needle. Let's make that happen.
Oh, so,
that would be so, you know, cool.
Well,
things
Jim,
like that,
you know what?
Get onto the news, right?
Jim, if you've got access to the Space Needle, here's what you got to do: 600-foot-tall banner.
Well, as long as it's sponsored by Sheldon, and I can get some, you know.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Yeah, I'll check. Here's my $5. Chris, you in for $5?
Yeah, I think I got some paint.
I just turned into a 6-foot banner, I'm afraid.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Standing up front of the needle.
So yeah, so it's you know, and things like that. So, like, again, sort of projecting into the future, even if that doesn't go through, like, the amount of possibilities for really interesting things like that. Like, we have one of the really big local donut. They're independently owned. They're called Mighty O Donuts, and they make, like, these awesome, like, kind of organic, really, really cool donuts. And like I did for the couple weeks leading up to the convention, did, like, a special Emerald City Comic Con donut, which is, like, a vanilla donut with glaze and then a green, like, green tea kind of frosting on it. And so they're just sitting there being like, yeah, check out the Emerald City Comic Con. We're big fans.
That's awesome. Wow.
So the city is really starting, more so than in years past, to really embrace the convention.
Yes, and that's where, you know, and that's where you'll see, like, growth too, is because the city is actually seeing that, like, oh, you know what, you actually draw, you know, 15,000 people to the city. That's not nothing, you know.
Right. Because I remember I had asked you in the years past, like, what do you need to get the city to do X, Y, and Z, and you said I need to be much bigger. And do you think it's a combination of A, getting bigger, and B, also their city is, like, so desperate in the recession to have tourism money that they're like, oh, thank God for Emerald City.
Bring out the fanboys.
Yeah.
You know, you never know. I think that, like, obviously, like, for us, you know, being able to show that there's X amount of people coming out to stay in hotels, like, so this year was the first year we dealt with, like, a hotel broker, right? So they went to the hotels and were like, we have this event, the Emerald City Comic Con. Can you offer a discount to the attendees? And they're like, yes. And so then they were all aggregated onto one website. But thanks to that, anybody who bought a ticket, a room, was tracked. And so that, like, I have much harder data that we're bringing X amount of people to the city, because look at all these people who use the Emerald City website who booked for that weekend. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes, so, it does. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, we had one hotel, same hotel last year versus the same hotel this year, same rate. But last year, they were like, yeah, we'll just put it on the website. If people call, it'll be fine. And there was no real tracking. Like, you know, they gave a code and this and that. Like, thanks to just having everything together, like, the same hotel has seen, and I'm not exaggerating, 1,000% increase in people who booked for Emerald City.
What?
Well, yeah, we actually sold out the hotel.
That is ridiculous.
Wow.
That's such huge growth.
Wow.
Yeah, so, like, that's the kind of thing that, like, then as you talk to the city, you can actually show them stuff like, hey, check it out. Or when you talk to people like, like the Space Needle, like, this is how many tourists we're bringing to the show. And, you know, their whole thing is like, great. Well, we'll do something to promote the show in exchange, aside from, you know, using the logo as part of your license agreement. How about we offer, like, a discount? Like, we're trying to get them to offer, you know, you take your Emerald City badge over to the Space Needle, and you get discounted admission to go to the top of the Space Needle.
Oh, wow. You know what? So, both Brad and I were talking about how we're too cheap to pay to go up. So that is actually awesome.
And if that, if we can get that to happen next year, that's just one more thing that shows, like, you know, because we want to. I mean, like, the reason I started this show was because I wanted to bring something awesome to Seattle and to the fans in Seattle. So if we can continue to work with the city and do cool things where the city is actually like, yeah, we're done doing fun promotions. Like, actually, even though this is now off in the time frame of Emerald City, we're actually hosting a superhero day with the Seattle Mariners. So, like, Emerald City Comic Con is working with the Mariners. You're going to go there. You're going to have costume contests, people doing caricatures. Like, it's just gonna be like a fun day. Like, and it's just us and the Mariners. Like, who knows that? That's awesome.
That's
like,
right.
I'm so excited, you know? So.
Oh, man. Congratulations, Jim. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I think everyone now that's listening to this is either saying, I'm really glad I'm going, or why didn't I schedule to go to this?
Well, you know, it's funny because, Jim, when you said that hotel had $1,000 or 1,000% growth, there's an old Irish saying that my grandparents used to say, which is money, 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 money.
Oh my god!
So excited for this convention.
Well, listen, I will say this. Anybody that's listening to this podcast has nobody but themselves to blame, because we say year after year after year, this is one of the shows that you absolutely have to go to.
Yeah, I was thinking about how it's not only is it the
what's
funny about that?
Because the way that it went in my headset, at least, and I'm sure when we put the podcast together, the audio will be correct, but it's like, you have no one to blame yourself, because we've said year after year.
Actually, Brad, he sounds fine to me now.
Okay.
Like, it seems like it really cleared up.
I'm trying to lay back, because I didn't know how I'm coming through.
No, you're doing better for me.
Well, good.
But I was going to say that, yeah, I mean, it's the start of the convention season. And I think that not only is it a great show, but it's also the one where we're going to be the most alert and up and excited as
yeah.
opposed to a show in October.
When right, as opposed to like Baltimore and New York Comic Con, where we're all going to be like,
hey,
right. Here, sign, stamp, take a book.
You want me to draw a skull as what? Whatever.
Yeah, okay, just get out of here.
So, it's just Brad standing on the table in October swinging a broom at people. No,
listen, I had my worst experience at the Emerald City Comic Con early on. I got it out of the way. And now I'll never have to have a bad experience at Emerald City Comic Con again. I got it all out the first year. I think it was like the first year.
Was that when you spilled a Coca-Cola on my sketchbook?
Yes, it was. So I was having, for some reason, it was at the height of, like, severe panic attacks for Scotty. It was before I had lost any weight. I was at my heaviest. I just didn't like traveling, and I was having panic attacks. So, like, at one point, poor Jeff Parker, he sees that we're selling a lot of plushes. And he comes over because he thinks he's going to come over, and he picks up a plush and says, ah, it seems a secret to doing well at these cons is to have a little plush, right? And he picks up the plush. What he didn't know is as that's happening, I'm over there and I feel a pain in my chest, and I turn to Angie and I'm like, I'm convinced at that moment I'm going to die inside the Emerald City Comic Con. It's going to ruin Jim's show, and ambulances are going to come, and everyone's going to
be
like,
–
no one's going to care that I'm dead. Everyone's going to be like, well, he was pretty heavy. I mean, what do you expect? And then all this is going through my mind a mile a minute, so this is how it goes down. Jeff Parker gets up, comes over, picks up a plush and says, well, I guess the secret to these cons is to have a little plush. I turn to Angie and I say, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. And Jeff goes, I'll come back. And he just slowly backs away from my booth. And Angie goes, what is wrong with you? Go up to the green room now and take a break. You have got to get this under control. You are not going to die. So, but
That's hilarious. I had not heard that story.
I was so stressed out for some reason. But that was the year that Jim brings me this sketchbook. Full of like Yeah, Jack Kirby came to life and was like, I want to draw on your sketchbook. And we're all like, oh, God, Jack Kirby's ghost. And he drew in my sketchbook, so that's in there. And then, like, Eric Larson drew in, like, all this amazing Fantastic Four stuff. And someone had brought me a Diet Coke and opened it for me, and I dumped it. And it went up to the side of it. Like, it colored the edges of the paper. But I thought I was gonna kill myself. I was ready to go get the back and kill myself. And Jim was so nice.
Well, and on some level, you sort of antiqued it. You know how like you take a match to the edge of a paper.
It's like a wash. Yeah,
yeah. That's exactly what I did. I'll never forgive
that's
myself
exactly
for that.
What I was thinking.
I'll never ever forgive myself for it.
And this will probably mean a lot to you, especially Scott. But I actually stopped taking the book conventions because the very last sketch in that book was a Watcher sketch by Mike Wieringo.
Oh, wow.
And so the very last sketch there is by Mike. And it was pretty soon, or it was pretty near to when he passed. And after that happened, I was like, yeah, you know, I'm done with this. This is my friend and the sketch, and I don't want this going out to conventions. And like, so the very last sketch in that book is actually by Mike.
That's awesome. Well, keep it safe away from me.
And by away from conventions, I meant away from Scott Kirby.
Yeah, that's exactly what you
meant. If we weren't exactly clear.
I want to say something else about Emerald City Con, okay? And it has nothing to do with Jim or anything. This is just something weird that happened to me last
year.
That
I am not interested.
No. Jim, distance yourself completely from this. Pretend that you've already said goodbye and you've logged off. But okay. At some point at last year, I turned to Brad and I go, are you getting a lot of transgenders? Because I am getting a lot of transgenders. Do you remember that, Brad? I'm like, what in the hell? Is there like a transgender factory here in Seattle? And then Koo comes over and says, Koo says, I'm like, listen, I don't have a problem with it. I have never run into a higher population at the convention of transgenders. Now, I'm not talking about some anime dude fan that dressed up as Sailor Moon for the weekend. I'm talking about people coming up and saying, hey, when are you going to talk about transgender stuff in your comic? And I'm like, I guess when I decide I want to cut my hoo-ha off and become – like, I got to talk from the heart so I wouldn't know how to discuss that. But I walked over to Koo and I'm like, for some reason I'm attracting transgenders. And Koo goes, largest population in the world right here. There's a convention every year, like right underneath PAX. And I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, 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 it's real big here. I'm like, well, they're all at my booth. So Chris was trying to come up with prints for, like, I got to do a special print for Emerald Sea. I'm like, yeah, I got to think of one too. And part of me went, I should probably do something about transgenders because it would be a big seller.
You know what's great, Scott? As predicted, Jim is going deadly silent.
Yeah, no,
silent.
Jim.
Jim's like, whoa, back away.
Yeah, you know what you could make for a print is print
no,
that
Jim,
story
Jim, you,
on there.
Jim, you could be the gentleman here. We're not putting you on the spot and making you say you're fine.
Well, listen, I don't want anyone to get the wrong impression. Nicest people that come to me during the whole show. But I was just like, I don't know. It's like I guess that's because I live in Texas, so it's kind of like seeing Elvis here. But I guess in Seattle – there's a lot of Elvis.
Yeah, and I get tired of eating the time I dance.
I'm going to just laugh at that because it'll need to be edited back in.
Yeah, just laugh at it. Whatever he said, I'm sure it was something punish.
I know it was good. I know it was good.
Anyway, so what a wonderful way to end this podcast. What a glorious way to end this podcast.
I went to a terrible deli in Seattle. I've got a story.
Jim, do you want to talk about Kirby Crackle before we let you go?
Yeah. Oh, that'd be awesome. In addition to Emerald City and the Stops, I'm a part of a nerd rock band called Kirby Crackle. We do songs about video games, comics, girls, zombies, things that are awesome. And we released our brand new album today, actually. You can check it out at KirbyCraftsMusic.com. We are playing a show at Emerald City Comic Con on Sunday. And it's going to feature Marvel editor-in-chief Joe Quesada, who's a huge fan of ours. And he learned four of our songs, and we'll be jamming up with Emerald City, or with Kirby Crackle at Emerald City Comic Con.
Wow.
So,
that is rad.
Yeah, just really good times. It's fun, actual, like, real rock songs about nerdy stuff made by a couple of dudes who are total dorks. So, now, if that's what you're into, then you can actually now, starting today, stream the whole album for $0 Canadian on our website,
awesome.
Yeah.
I think I may do that while I'm working today.
Yeah, you just leave it playing, see if you dig it. You guys probably dig Roll Over, which is a excellent nerd fest comic song about a crazy night out drinking with all the ladies of cartoons and comics. And yeah, our friend GMK, the rapper out of LA, came in and did the bridge, and it's actually pretty sweet. So if you get a chance, check it out. I think you guys would totally enjoy it. Also, for Video Jammers, we've been going back and forth with an entire song about Fallout 3, if that's anything that either of you guys any of you played. Yeah, called it's the first song to play. It's Vault 101. So there you go,
man. Well, thanks for coming on the show, and thanks for throwing such an awesome show. I know that it's all we can think about right now. We're very excited about Seattle.
Well, thank you so much. I'm super excited. You guys will be there. It's going to be a ridiculous webcomics contingent too. It should be fun times for everyone who's a fan of webcomics. So.
Yeah, you've always been very pro webcomics, man. I see that Topatico has a giant booth. It's going to be a huge webcomics party.
I know, not to be stupid, but there's like five web cartoonists I get to meet at Seattle for the first time. I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, like, it's funny because, what was I going to say? There's guys who are just coming out, like, just randomly, because, like, R. Stevens was like, I'm just going to pop out to the show and, like, hang out at my friend Meredith's table. Is that cool? I'm like, yeah, that's cool. No, just like, there's just like, the guys from Unspelled, just a ridiculous amount of people that are going to be there, so.
Awesome.
Friends of Webcomics is the Emerald City Comic Con, so.
Yes.
There we go. Well, guys, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you in a mere days, so it's going to be nuts.
All righty, buddy.
All right.
Go back to your getting busy and stuff. I know you got lots to do.
I'll do that, and we'll see you soon.
All right, thanks.
See you, brother.
See you this weekend.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. See you the weekend.
Okay, Paul. Now that Jim's gone, what a jerk.
Wow. I can't believe how much he talked about himself.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard of self-centered, but my God.
We sell out hotels, blah, blah, blah. We get it. Wow, through a convention.
What a
Seattle Mariners, bitty, body, boom.
Look at me. Space Needle. I'm in a band. Wow.
God, though, 1,000% growth in all seriousness. Jeez Louise, this show's going to be huge in 2 or 3 years.
Now I'm worried that I don't have enough product.
Yeah. As he's saying that, I'm pinging Joe Keating going, how many book sevens are we bringing?
I know. Can I tell you? I looked at my list of how many I've already sent ahead, and I was like, oh, did not bring enough of book two. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Cut to us there. Nobody's buying our shit.
Just spider webs. Huge line in front of Kate Beaton. Us just kind of twiddling our thumbs. Oh, well.
Hey, we're webcomics too. Yep.
We are in we're in Penny Arcade spot this year. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah,
all right.
I don't know if that's all right.
Why? What's wrong with that?
Well,
were they in a bad spot?
They're way in the corner, right?
I actually liked our spot last year a little bit better, but I'm fine with this.
But the thing is, like, I'm like, wow, the Penny Arcade spot. Lots of people are always over there. Well, yeah, because they're penny arcade.
But you know what? You know what, Scotty? You know what's going to be awesome about that area is not to oversell it, but there are like 10 cartoonists in the Topatico booth, and Meredith is right around the corner.
Yeah.
And right, it's going to be a huge web.
It's going to be a big web comics party there. I can't wait.
It's going to be good. It's going to be really good.
I'm thirsty for it.
I'm thirsty for it. I'm hungry for adventure.
I'm hungry.
Too bad comics are going to die, though, before that 2012 show. It's too bad. Anyway, so that was Jim Demonakis, and we talked about the Emerald City Con, and why am I recapping this I'm a goddamn radio guy?
It's like NPR, yeah.
We never try to wrap up anyway. We always just go, all right, I don't give a shit. See you later. Bye.
Well, hold on. Can I share exciting news with you guys? Because you probably saw it yesterday, but I'm super excited about it.
Tell me.
Oh, yeah.
So did you guys hear the news about Ohio State?
Yeah.
Oh.
Tell us, though.
Wow. I'm so excited for this. So every 3 years, Ohio State has this festival of cartoon art. And like I had sort of heard of it first a long time ago because of the speech that Watterson gave there in 1989. And so they do it every year, and it's sort of this mix of like professional cartoonists and academics and like theorists of cartooning. And along with it, they do two museum shows, like a gallery of like, you know, Milt Kniff's work or Schultz's work or Watterson's work or whoever that year, or the last time I think they did Bone.
Yeah.
And so this year they invited me out to talk, and so I'm going to talk about web comics and talking.
Can you attend it if you want to?
They really limit the size so that there's like really intimate exchanges and like meaningful exchanges. So it's only going to be 275 tickets are sold.
Oh.
But I think, Scotty, I can give you an email if you want to, and I'm sure that
it's this year though, right? When is it?
Yeah, it's October. You know what? I actually don't remember.
Hold on. Well, send me an email when it is. This year's crazy, so.
Anyway, I'm super excited. Because
that's awesome.
I've always sort of been following in the back of my, you know, in the back. Like, there's two or three things. I told you guys this before. There's two or three things that I've always wanted to go to as a professional. And one of them is like Angoulême. One of them was like the Schultz Museum. One of them was this cartoon art museum thing. And so I'm super excited to go to this. This is going to be awesome. And like the other people talking, it's like Matt Groening's talking, Paul Levitz,
the XDC guy.
DC guy, Dan Peraro of Bizarro, Roz Chast, who's the New Yorker cartoonist. It's a really, really good lineup. Spiegelman of Mouse is going to be there. Uh-huh. Patrick McDonald of Mutz is going to be talking.
Oh, sweet.
Oh, it's going to be good. I'm excited. I'm excited. So anyway, I wanted to share that with you. That's the perfect sort of one. What, Brad? I'm sorry.
What's a hook to the story, to the talk you're going to give? It's kind of like going to get a response to something.
He wants to know what the hook is to the story you're going
to
give.
Oh, to the talk? Yeah, so in 89, Watterson gave this really beautiful talk, I thought, that summarized, you know, because I think later on he got a little more cantankerous. In 89, he gave this really good thing that, like, look, comics can be saved. There can be more to comics than what they are right now. Like, right now they're toy factories, or they're being carried on by zombie creators long after the original died, or they're watered down to meaningless interchangeable voices in the paper. And, you know, he was talking all about the restrictions and the limitations and the shrinking sizes in newspapers and stuff. And so my talk is basically going to be – I actually – with the hope that he might actually come, because he sometimes does – I actually want to respond to that talk in 89 about how, look, here are the 15 things that Watterson brought up as being the troubling aspects afflicting modern comic strips, and here are the things that I think are going right in large part thanks to webcomics. And, you know, I'm going to address the fact that, look, there is no perfect and ideal system for distributing comic strips. You know, webcomics have their problems too, but here's what I think they're doing right. And addressing Watterson's concerns. So I think it's going to be a good, recap in the same forum of what he talked about.
No, that's awesome. That's a great approach.
Yeah, I think it'll be good. But anyway, I'm super excited to go there, and I'm super excited to meet a lot of these guys. So anyway, I'm just jazzed about that.
Congratulations.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done.
Oh, thank you. I'm excited. I'm excited. I'm really excited to do it. So next up, Angoulême. I got to start working that angle.
Yeah.
I want that like 2015. That's what we're shooting for. I'm going to get those frogs. That's a great way to do it. Oh, way to warm their hearts. Oh, there's someone in France right now was writing down to invite David Kellett, and then I get to that part and they're like scratching it out on their list.
And then he stops scratching and he goes, "Meh, we are frogs."
I was gonna say he says Angoulême canceled. You know what? I'm sick of cartoonists.
He's listening to 1,000% growth on Emerald City's part, and just tears are running down his eyes. He's like, "Oh."
Well, that's the thing, is that, like, he's listening to a bunch of comics podcasts, wondering which American cartoonist to invite, and every single one of them has made that joke. They don't realize it. That's the go-to.
Yeah, the only person left to invite is Eisner, just because he's dead. He's like, "He has not made a frog joke."
I think we're okay. Hey.
And Scott, you've got your iPhone app launched yesterday, right?
Oh yeah. I guess I do have news. I'm trying to figure out, according to iVerse, it is the number one comic reader now and number 10 in books, but I don't know how to see this. He told me to go to iTunes and take a look at the books top free apps section. How the hell do I do that?
How did you do it?
I don't know.
2:30, yeah, I know. Books, top free apps. Well, anyway, no, geez, I don't know how to look. Top charts, paid apps.
So you made it. You made it.
Well, anyway, I shut up. It's important. So anyway, yes, I have teamed up with iVerse, which, is one of two or three different, comic book reader makers. And I really liked iVerse. Brad and I, Brad's got one coming out too. They're working on his right now. But iVerse has this really awesome book reader, which works kind of like the same way the Comixology app works and the Panelfly app works. You know, you log into it, you download comics, they're in your little library, you read them when you want to. But what we did with iVerse was we worked with them to create a page called Daily. And so when you launch the app, instead of it taking you to, like, what's new for sale in this digital comic store, it takes you to the front page of this little mobile daily hub for your comic, because, you know, web comics have daily content. And so you can click to see today's strip, and it loads it, just pulls the image down, just pulls down the strip for you. You don't have to open up Safari and pinch it and stretch it so you can get the strip readable. It just puts it right in there for you. You can click on it or tap it, I guess, and hit previous and just back up and read, you know. You could back up all the way to the beginning if you wanted to, I guess, but it's just convenient to let you read, catch up to last week. You can read the blog. There's links on that page to the store and the website itself, if you do want to go look at the archives in more depth in Safari. And then the rest of the application is a skinned version of their normal reader, which lets you, if you want to, if you're so inclined to download 99-cent digital copies of the PvP comics that I sold through Image. And it's available for free on the App Store now.
And you can also get Truth Just in an American Way through that app, too.
Yeah, I did. I did put
Truth. I was checking that out last night.
I'm sorry?
I was checking it out last night.
Oh, yeah. It looks really awesome on there, too, man. I was really pleased with how they put Justin on that phone. The only time I've ever seen Justin on a mobile device was when UClick broke it up for phones before they were smartphones, and it was kind of sad. But that was the limitation of the technology, not UClick's fault. But to see Justin on the iPhone is pretty cool. I really hope Justin can find a new life. I think it's an overlooked book. So check it out, definitely. And if you download it and you like it, please take the time to review it, because that really helps inside that kind of world of apps. Yeah, if it's reviewed, then Apple notices it. They might feature it. And then what you really hope for is that people that don't know about webcomics or PvP might find the app and check it out.
So that's a good lead into the question that I was going to ask you. So do you do it, or do you go into it more for the possibilities of like promoting to a new audience, or do you do it as a moneymaker, or what was your
Brad and I talked about this. We decided we were debating, do we charge for it or not, right? Like, do we say 99 cents, because it's a classier way to look at, you know, it's a more convenient and classier way to read the strip every day without having to load up the site in mobile Safari. And certainly I think you could probably get away with charging 99 cents for that or something. Or do we offer it for free, and then if we want to make money off of it, it's essentially just kind of like this really awesome RSS feed at that point. Mm-hmm. And then any money that you make would be if you wanted to sell comics inside of it. And so I was talking to a couple people, getting their opinions, and I actually talked to Bill Roper about it. And Bill said to me, what are you more interested in this app becoming? A revenue stream, like a product that you sell, like it's just another book, or a platform, a new platform? Because if you're interested in it being another product, sell it for 99 cents. It's just another item you sell. But if you're interested in the possibilities of the iPhone and soon the iPad as a platform, then give it away for free. Get it into as many hands as possible, and then use it to push digital comics. And I thought I was more interested – it was more exciting to think of it as a platform, because I would love to make mini comics and books and stuff for it. It would be fun. Anyway, it also just felt kind of going against my instinct to charge for it when – I mean, if the whole life of PvP has been let people see the strip for free and then sell merchandise based on it, and I'm going to move into mobile and go against that, it just seemed like I was tempting fate.
Yeah. Oh, no. And just so you know, I wasn't judging you on charging or not charging. I was just sort of curious as to your thoughts going into it, like what your...
No, best case scenario, I'm looking at it as a really awesome RSS feed. You know, I mean, I've got the RSS feed. You know, people see the strip. They really like it. It has not hurt my sales or anything. Really afraid to put the comic in the RSS feed, and really, really afraid to put it in the RSS feed. And everyone was like, no, put the comic in there. Do it for a month, and if you see, like, you're losing money, then you can take it out again. And I put it in there, and like, I talk to Koo about this all the time. Like, my page views aren't what they used to be. Like, my page views aren't what they were at the height of PvP's page views. And Robert's like, well, why is that statistic so important to you? What are your numbers? How are you making more money? And I'm like, oh, I'm making more money now than I ever made. And he's like, I don't think page views are as important necessarily anymore. You know, look at your mm-hmm. trends. Look at this and that. So, I mean, I think best case scenario, this is just another way to make sure that my readers can get the strip and keep it in their mind as easy as possible and have it on the go. I already got a couple emails from people saying that they have newborn babies and they can't be at the computer. And so this is really awesome because they're living on their phones right now. And they can
Can I tell you, that was so true with me for the first year. So yeah, I can see that happening. Whenever I was putting my daughter to sleep, I would have the iPhone kind of slightly out of her view, you know, and was reading the news or something. So
I mean, the way I look at it is, if people don't read my website, if someone says, I like reading my webcomics and RSS feeds, so please put the comic in the feed. And I say, no, I don't want to do that. My living depends on you coming to the site. Well, I've lost a reader. He's not going to go, oh, okay, well, then I'll come to the site. That's not how he views the comic. So I've lost the reader anyway. I might as well give it to him in the RSS feed, because then it's in his head every day. Then he's seeing it every day, and maybe that leads to a conversion where he does come to the site more than he would.
Or just buys a book, or buys a book to you.
Or buys a book or something like that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I've just never been afraid of getting away. But I'm really excited about the potential of the platform. I'm already working on a little mini comic that has nothing to do with PvP or anything. It's just about actually this community inside of a local mall. I'm just doodling around. And it's like, this is fun because it's not just something I'm doing for fun. I could put this in the store for 99 cents and, you know, it'll be fun.
Right.
Scott, I have found your – am I coming through okay?
A little bit, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll do it real quick. Not in iTunes. Look on your iPhone, the App Store. Go to categories, hit books. Under books, hit free book or top free.
Oh, I just found it. I just found it. Okay,
you are right under the Bible. Only beaten out by Bible, and you're not in the top tier. You're a little bit further down.
Okay, so top free iPhone apps under the books category. Number one is Kindle. Number two is Goodreads. Three is audiobooks. Four is Stanza, which is a free book reader. Five is classic novels. Mm-hmm. Six is Alice in Wonderland. Seven is the Barnes & Noble Reader. Eight is Best Jokes. Nine is Bible Reader. And 10 is PvP.
Yes.
So I am 13, above.
13, I think, is Comixology.
And what?
13 or 14 is like Comixology. That's the next comic-related reader on the list.
Yeah. Yeah, I've officially beat the Comixology comics reader for right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I wanted.
That's all I wanted. Done. I'm out.
Stop downloading. Stop downloading. Go to the website.
I want to be heard. What's your rating? I haven't gotten far down yet.
Excuse me?
I'm a stars.
Did anybody understand what Geigertron just fucking said?
What's your rating? You got 4.5
rating.
Stars.
Your rating.
Oh, my rating. I'm like 4.5 stars. 54 ratings. But it's only my fans rating it now, so. Although, you know, that could mean anything, my fans. I wouldn't be surprised to go through here and see, like, oh, I see you have time to make an app, but not today's strip. Or I see you have time to make an app, but not get my order out from 3 years ago when it was just you and your sister-in-law. Well, yeah, after one day, all right, we are number 10 in free books.
That is awesome.
People
like free stuff. Now, I just got, if I can beat the Kindle, I'll be happy. Then I'll be, I don't know, if I knock Kindle off free iPhone apps, then I buy everyone who downloaded the app a beer. A digital beer.
The free beer pouring app, or
yeah,
go have fun.
It's just some Heineken thing that pours a fake Heineken. You're like, no, oh, here you go,
and here's a lighter, and here's a lightsaber,
and you know what? Here's five versions of a flashlight. Here you go,
whatever you need.
All right, so Chris, Brad, what's your news for the week?
Ooh.
I got nothing that follow that. I got nothing. Oh, I will say this. Webcomics.com, we just passed a subscriber threshold that I didn't think we were going to hit till the summer. So I'm very excited about that.
Oh, that's good. Awesome.
Yeah, it's been better than I could have imagined.
Yeah, for those of you that couldn't translate that, webcomics.com has hit a subscriber subscriber number that we never in a million years thought we'd reach. So, Brad, everyone at webcomics.com is just super happy. So
that is rad. Well, now, last and not least, is my plug. The Friday before Emerald City Comic Con at Arcane Comics in West Seattle, David Malky and I will be doing Tweet Me Harder, our comedy podcast, live. Topotico is throwing a party before and after that. The show starts at 7, but you can get there at 6 p.m. And I'm led to believe there's going to be a lot of web cartoonists at Arcane Comics that night.
I know, I'll be there.
Nice.
So, yeah, so come on and check it out. There's two Arcane Comics in Seattle, but it's the one in West Seattle on California Avenue.
Well, that's appropriate. So, Chris, the party is the party itself at Arcane, or is the just the podcast at Arcane?
No, the party also.
Oh, the party also.
So, just one place with probably just an enormous amount of parking around it. Given the rest of Seattle's layout, I'm sure it'll be great.
And let's say, just out of curiosity, that if there was a cartoonist from, say, Los Angeles that was coming, and he was thirsty. Would there be something for that kind of cartoonist there?
Oh, yeah. David Malky always brings vitamin water for himself. He is from Los Angeles. You know, you get thirsty doing a podcast.
No. Let's get more specific. A cartoonist who is heavy set, who's getting fat.
I already said I was going to be there, dude. Not cool.
All right, let's be more specific. An increasingly gray-haired cartoonist who's getting heavy set.
Come on, Dave. I'm right here. Why you... I can neither.
All right. Can I have a beer? Will there be a beer?
Yes.
Thank you.
Jesus Christ, David. Why don't you say it?
I have got to get over my passive-aggressive question.
You drink beer.
Come on. Take it easy, Chug Lugs.
Do you guys like my techno version?
Jim mentioned it, but I think
Sherlyn loved that.
Jim mentioned it, but we should say, I don't even know what we're talking about, but we have a talk on Sunday at 2 at Emerald City.
Oh, I want to do the 20-second thing there. Do you guys want to do that?
Yeah. That sounded like fun. Yeah, I'm up for that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun. So prepare your questions for us because we will only have 20 seconds to answer them. You know what the best part about that is that the only people disappointed by that format is the audience. Like when someone's like, well, so like, how do you determine how many t-shirts that you should make, blah, blah. And then we're like, well, what you do is first you got to do, well, first take your readership, I guess. That's the most important.
Ding!
Ding! And then they go, sorry. And then they're like, oh, but, and you're like, next question.
No, I was going to say that it's getting refined. You don't need the full 20 seconds. Like, I'm starting at my webcomic next month. How many hundreds of t-shirts should I print? Just give me the number to multiply by 1,000. It's like, no, zero. It's zero.
Zero times 1,000. Well, how many t-shirts should I make? What's the name of your comic? No Shoes for Tuesday. Never heard of it. Sit down. Don't make t-shirts. How much time do I have left? 5 seconds. Sit down.
Sit down, sure.
Or you're like, yeah. How much time do I have left? 1.5 seconds. Sit down.
Sit.
See, that's what you want is beer on that panel.
We could turn a drinking game.
That's right. And we are this okay. Guy so again. I'm going to get out some actual information. So
this guy again. Is that what you said?
Are you still trying to make webcomics? Oh, come on.
No, what I was going to say is that we are at booth 102. Topatico's at 202. Who else is around us? Meredith is at, I think, 206. No, wait, 30. She's right behind us. Who else is around? Casey Green is over on the other side.
Casey's like in the back.
I know, poor guy. Who else is around us, though? There were some other people. Come on, help me out. And Shelved is nearby us.
Malky's there, right? I assume he's there.
Topatico has a big old island, I think, this year. So there's like 15 people there.
Yeah, Topatico's got a big kaboom, big thing where we normally are. That whole block. Jeff Jock's going to be there, right?
Yep. Kate Beaton will be there, who I'm excited to meet. Who else is coming that I haven't met?
Bradbot, are you online?
Bradbot,
you have failed in your mission again.
True, clearly, I have a coming shelly. I'm gonna true like
one more like this, and it's complete deactivation. You hear me?
Talk gonna.
All right, that's better.